So at a high level, you know, we think politics has no impact long term on the markets or the economy, can be additive to the volatility near term. It's ultimately policy.
The Weighing Machine was created to help you, the financial advisor or investor, reach your long-term financial goals. Each episode, your hosts, Rusty Vanneman and I, Robin Murray, cut through the market clamor to find the time-tested principles that help investors succeed.
The Weighing Machine is inspired by the classic investing truism attributed to Benjamin Graham. The stock market is a voting machine in the short run and a weighing machine over the long term. In other words, emotion drives short-term market movement, but fundamentals and valuations drive returns over time.
Welcome to the Weighing Machine.
Enjoy, and as always, let us know what you think.
On the podcast today, there is an election coming up. If you haven't heard, it's a big one. Well, maybe for us, but maybe not really for the markets.
We will also discuss the election, investor sentiment, and the transformational forces shaping the way we live and work. We will also discuss with our guest, Tim Holland, Senior Vice President and Global Investment Strategist at Brinker Capital, his views on the upcoming election and the concerns he is hearing from advisors. Welcome to the Weighing Machine. I'm Rusty Vanneman.
And I'm Robin Murray. Okay, let's start with a look at the markets. It's been a volatile couple of weeks, as we're sort of getting used to saying. Discussions over whether or not to pass a federal stimulus package have stalled and then restarted, causing volatility to spike. So what are we watching for at the moment?
We just want the election to be over. That's what we're watching right now. Now, probably the biggest thing for investors as we're recording this podcast is regarding the stimulus package that's being debated and discussed. But, you know, we've heard the song before. You know, it's just negotiation stage. I think the market expects it to be passed and kind of looking through that already. But those are kind of the big things we're looking for right now.
Well, how important do you think it is for the government to really inject further funds into the economy through the stimulus at this point?
Well, I would say it is pretty important right now because I think the market really expects it. So if it really doesn't happen, then I think that would be a major disappointment for the market. But I think it is, the market expects it. I think the economy needs it right now. And, you know, we're already at a situation right now where fiscal policy is the second most expansive in U.S. history, only second to World War II. Who knows, by the time we finally deal with COVID-19, it might actually surpass it. You match that with monetary policy at already all-time highs. I mean, don't fight the Fed. And the market is basically just living off all this liquidity.
And have our market expectations for the remainder of 2020 changed?
Now, I wouldn't say that it has, not yet. I mean, I think it's still a positive expectation. And one reason I just said, don't fight the Fed and don't fight all the liquidity in the system. You know, the data, again, is still trending the right way in the most part. We've had a couple economic data points that have been really positive. Third quarter GDP is going to just be a mind-boggling positive number. And again, we feel the wall of worry is still in place. Investors are still too cautious. You can see it in various sentiment surveys. There is anecdotal evidence that, you know, things might be a little bit kind of too bullish in some areas. But for the most part, in the aggregate, investors are still cautious. I think that sets the stage for above average gains moving forward.
Well, as you mentioned, investor sentiment is still negative overall. It's hard for anyone to stay positive, really, when there's just so much uncertainty. We're not sure how long the pandemic is going to last and what other ways our lives will be disrupted by it. We're not sure whether the economy will recover and in what ways it will be just fundamentally changed. So how can financial advisors encourage investors to get invested and stay invested when there's just such uncertainty and negativity in the national mood?
Well, Robin, I think you actually hit a couple key words there, and it really is encouraging investors to get invested and stay invested. And as we believe, and I know the folks at Brinker believe it too, to build wealth, you need to invest and stay invested. Yes, there are reasons to be cautious. You know, I even think some of the transformational forces that are out there, changing the way we live and work, they qualify as innovation, and you could say they're positive changes, but you know, for other people, they are disruptive. So there's a lot of things giving people, you know, concern. But I think the important thing is to encourage investors, and there are various ways to do that. Obviously, this is through education, but you know, there are actually investment themes you can work with. And one of the investment themes, for instance, right now that you hear about is like something called megatrends. And these are like big positive opportunities big changes going on in our society and our economy. You know, examples of possible megatrends could be things like, of course, all the technological breakthroughs we're witnessing, all the demographic and social change, you know, rapid urbanization, climate change, emerging global wealth. There's just so much stuff going on. I think those are stories that can engage some investors.
And can you talk a little bit about the role of direct indexing in this current investing environment?
Well, of course, you are relating to the last commentary I wrote talking about direct indexing. And direct indexing is one of those concepts that if you've never heard of it before, you should learn more about it. But for others who say direct indexing is going to like wipe out ETFs, it's clearly overrated. In short, what direct indexing is, instead of buying an index fund, you directly invest in the underlying securities of the index. So instead of buying the S&P 500, you might buy 50 or 100 stocks that are optimized to have the same return on the risk of the S&P. That sounds really complicated, but there are good reasons for it. The biggest reason is for taxable investors. You can basically, you have all these different tax lots and all these opportunities, a tax loss harvest. You can get a tax elf of 1% to 2%. If you're an advisor, this is a great opportunity to show how technology can bring additional value to your portfolio. Taxes are probably going to go up, maybe not immediately, but obviously there's a lot of fiscal spending. At some point, it'll probably have to be paid. Market returns, at least in the U.S., are probably not going to be as robust in the next 5-10 years. Valuations are high, interest rates are low. After-tax returns are as important as ever, and direct indexing is a way to do tax loss harvesting, improve the after-tax return, and customize the portfolios. It can be complex. It may require some education, but I think it's well worth it.
Well, let's bring in our guest. Tim Holland is Senior Vice President and Global Investment Strategist at Brinker Capital. Hey, Tim, welcome to The Weighing Machine.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Rusty. I'm happy to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you all.
Absolutely. So, Tim, your career in financial services spans 2 decades. You were a partner and a portfolio manager at Tamro Partners in Virginia for many years. You've spent the last 3 years at Brinker Capital as a global investment strategist. I'm going to ask you more about that, but first, and by far the most important question of this entire podcast is, since we've just introduced you, we need to hear some background music in our heads here. What would be your walk-up song as Tim Holland comes up to present on The Weighing Machine?
Yeah, that is a great question. I'm going to go with Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi. I am from the great state of New Jersey, and I love that song. It's got a great hook to it, but what I really love about it is it's kind of gritty and tough and optimistic all at the same time. And that's not a bad way to go through life, right? Kind of be ready for some tough times, but always believe, you know, deep down that you're going to get there, you're going to make it. So I'm going to go with Bon Jovi's "Living on a Prayer."
A nice selection. You know, I think, Robin, I think we need to set up our Spotify playlist of some of these walk-up songs of our guests so far.
Oh, I know, that's a great idea.
Absolutely. All right, Tim, so tell us about your work at Brinker. And also, I'm going to throw 2 questions in at one because I got to give the ball back to Robin. But tell us about your work at Brinker and also what drew you into investing in the first place.
Yeah, I'll take the former and then go to the latter. So at Brinker, I wear 2 primary hats as the firm's investment strategist. So I'm vice chair of our asset allocation committee. So for those portfolios where we have discretion or control over portfolio construction and asset allocation, I lend a hand on those efforts. And even for those accounts where we don't have discretion or control, you know, the thinking of the asset allocation committee and all the stuff you all have already been talking about, the business cycle, the election, markets, expected rates of return, you know, the thinking of the asset allocation committee sort of goes across the firm and hopefully creates value for our colleagues who are helping financial advisors manage their clients' money, even where we may not have full discretion. And then the other primary responsibility as the firm's investment strategist, and this is kind of part and parcel of our conversation today, is if there's any interest in that thinking that the asset allocation committee is doing and the conclusions we're reaching, I'll go and share that with our financial advisor clients. In the old days, you know, like you, Rusty, I'd be on an airplane on a pretty regular basis. Now it's mostly Zoom and Microsoft Teams. So, you know, we'll share our thinking with the advisors we work with, if there's any interest among the advisors with their end clients. So a fair amount of public speaking. Now it's all remote and virtual and a fair amount of writing. So sort of half market facing, half communications and client facing work. And then in terms of what drew me to investing. This answer could go on for a very long time, but I'll try and be brief. I come from a political family, not a capital markets family, but I ended up getting a job in New York City in the 90s at a small public relations firm, and all of our clients were investment firms and entities like the American Stock Exchange. So I had to get to know what our clients were doing for a living if I was going to help them as their media and public relations counsel. So I started with what is a stock and what is a bond. And after years of working for investment firms and investment banks, I ended up more interested really in what they were doing than what I was doing for them. And so I ended up transitioning, changing careers. But at a high level, you know, I think the great thing about investing is, you know, like lots of people say, it's different every day. It's dynamic. It's such an important part of the economy, the stock market and capital markets. But for me, it's really how important it is to just, you know, all of us to kind of understand how the world works, how the markets work. To your point, as you said earlier to Robin, get invested, stay invested, let time work on your behalf. So I just find it a fascinating part of the world, a fascinating place to work. But I also really enjoy where I can, just trying to make it all a little more relatable and explainable, because a lot of folks don't understand it. And investing and looking out for oneself financially is so important. And if I can help folks kind of understand how all this works, you know, I really want to do that. So that's what drew me to it or got me interested in it. And a big part of what keeps me interested in it, if that makes sense.
Well, Tim, as you mentioned, you've got a political background. Before you started in financial services, you were you majored in political science at Drew University. Yeah. And you also worked as a legislative assistant in New York City government. Is that right?
Yeah.
So as one political junkie to another, I'm guessing and hoping that you still are. I looked at Brinker's Election 2020 microsite that you've been writing for, which is a countdown to November 3rd. So I'm guessing you still are. But I know Rusty wants to ask you more about the election's impact on the markets, which you've written about. But first, let me put the question that I asked Rusty earlier to you. How important do you think the role of the federal government is in helping the economy recover from the pandemic?
Yeah, I probably don't have a big enough vocabulary, Robin, to accurately or effectively communicate how important the federal government has been to helping the economy recover from the pandemic. And like you, I remain a political junkie. The creator of macroeconomics was a British economist, John Maynard Keynes, and Keynesian economics. Kind of, you know, at a high level says when the economy's going to heck in a handbasket and the consumer's falling apart, well, there's only one entity that can step up and create capital and put a floor under the economy and risk assets like stocks, and that's the federal government or any government, right, that has the printing press that can create currency out of thin air. So that's what the federal government did. Rusty talked earlier about the Federal Reserve and monetary policy. So I think it's impossible to overstate the importance, the role the government's played. And I know we have an election coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're so divided politically and culturally. But I, as a citizen, continue to take a tremendous amount of comfort in the way Democrats and Republicans came together earlier this year when things, I know we still have a ways to go and this awful pandemic is still with us, but you know, I just take a tremendous amount of comfort in the fact that Republicans and Democrats came together and acted with great dispatch, incredibly forceful to put a floor under the economy. And I think, you know, that's something that is maybe too quickly forgotten. I think it's something we can all be proud of.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, the election is thankfully less than a month away. And you're talking to a lot of advisors. So what is your current counsel for advisors and investors in terms of what they should be thinking about and doing, and given how the election may impact the economy and the markets?
Yeah. So near term, and I know you're having the same types of conversations, Rusty. You know, it's really driving just about every conversation we're having. The upcoming vote, what it may mean, the outcome. What if we don't know who the winner is on November 3rd? What does a contested election mean for the markets and the economy? And so at a high level, you know, we think politics has no impact long-term on the markets or the economy, can be additive to volatility near-term. It's ultimately policy that matters. So, you know, we're still more optimistic than not about the U.S., about the markets, as you were talking, you were saying the same thing earlier, Rusty. So we're having clients just kind of take a deep breath, take a step back. Let's see what happens come November 3rd. Let's see who wins, what parties can party controls the House and the Senate, who sits in the White House, and then we'll reassess. Outside of the near-term volatility and the concerns around a contested election, you know, we think the big question has to do with taxes going into 2021, fiscal policy at a high level, taxes and spending in particular. So, you know, depending on the outcome, you could see some changes to tax policy. You talked about taxes going up. Near term, though, we're just trying to remind folks to put this in perspective. It can be additive volatility, but long term, it's not politics that matter. It's ultimately policy. And we just don't know enough yet on that front. So we shouldn't speculate too much. It would probably end up doing more harm than good.
Well, Tim, as we mentioned earlier, investor sentiment is very negative at the moment. Investors are worried about the economy, the pandemic, and of course, the election. Other than, as you've mentioned, the election concerns, what are some of the other top concerns that you're hearing from financial advisors?
You know, I think as the weather gets colder and we move into the fall, Robin, you know, it has to do with the ongoing hope for reopening of the economy. You know, will that continue, or are we looking at a pending spike in cases that maybe calls into question, you know, our ability to sort of better manage and better live with this awful pandemic? So folks are worried about that. To your point, obviously, as we've just talked about, they're worried about the election, and I think some folks are just worried about risk assets or U.S. equities in particular, just given the parabolic move the stock markets had off that March 23rd low. Using the S&P as a broad proxy for U.S. equities, right? We're up over 50% or so through some of the worst economic data we've seen since the Great Depression. And so I think folks are struggling with that. You know, we speak to why the rally makes sense to us, why it's rational. And I think a point that's worth keeping in mind that can maybe provide some context for what is still a very unsettled and difficult period for all of us is that we are in a new economic expansion. The economy likely bottomed out in April, and we're in a new bull market, right? The S&P 500 took out its all-time prior all-time high last month. And if history is any guide, bull markets run 4 to 5 years, and economic expansions in the post-World War II period run 47 months. And I think that is really hard for people to get their heads around, given how unsettled and uncertain the times are. But history tells you that we're most likely, hard as it is to believe, in the early stages of a new economic expansion and a new bull market, both of which should run for years. So we're just trying to provide perspective and context and help folks, again, navigate this very difficult period as well as possible.
Yeah. So Tim, we talked about megatrends earlier in the show. And again, these are the transformational forces shaping the way we work and live. You know, things like technology, working from home, demographic shifts, climate change, among others. Again, these are big changes that are exciting, but they're also causing investors to be cautious. What are your thoughts on these investing opportunities and what these trends represent?
Yeah, and looking or thinking about those different trends, I have a deep-seated belief and optimism in sort of human ingenuity, right? Our ability to solve for big problems. It's what we do as a species. So I know we have lots of challenges that we're facing today that we will face for a while. But, you know, smart people, some capital, some government support, you put all those things together and great things happen if you think about some of the environmental challenges in particular. You know, the one that I really pay a lot of attention to would be demographics. You know, the world's getting older at a rapid rate. You know, there's some famous sort of pretty well-known sayings or cliches, you know, like China will get old before it gets rich. You know, Japan is shrinking, though their stock market's back to, you know, pretty much all-time highs, which is pretty impressive. Italy, Western Europe. So I think, you know, if economic growth is driven by growth in labor force, the size of the labor force and productivity, you know, I think demographics is going to pose a big, big challenge to more developed countries. You know, how do you keep the economy growing as many population bases are aging rapidly? And I think that goes hand in glove with the other mega trend you talked about, technology, doing more with AI and robotics and machines, because we're just not going to have enough people. So I think the countries that can solve for that, the companies that can solve for that are going to have a massive leg up, because just about every part of the world, even the emerging or developing world, is looking at sort of demographic cliffs that we're all going to be going over in the next 10, 20 years. And so that creates a lot of challenge, but also huge opportunity, again, especially for technology companies to step up and help us solve for all that. So for all of those are important. But for me, I think demographics is just, it's just a fascinating one to pay attention to.
Thanks, Tim. Interesting stuff. So where can listeners find out more about Brinker and read some of your commentary?
Yeah. So we've got what we call our insights page, Robin. So if you go to www.blog.brinkercapital.com, you can access our market and economic commentary. We've got a great chief behavioral officer, Dr. Daniel Crosby, who's got some great content to help us all navigate this very stressful period. And you had mentioned our Election 2020 microsite. There's a link at blog.brinkercapital.com that'll get you to our election microsite, where we're housing all of our analysis, our best thinking about the upcoming vote and what it might mean for the markets and the economy into Election Day, and then further into the new year.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was a great experience, great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's going to do it for this week. Rusty, final words?
Well, first of all, also thanks to Tim for coming on the show. Again, I've been checking out and reading now for quite some time the Monday blog and the microsite with the election stuff. It's all good stuff. He also referred to another resource at Brinker, Daniel Crosby, the behavioral finance expert, who's a lot of great stuff. And my closing words that I always say for the podcast, actually, Daniel Crosby might have a better version of it, but I always say stay balanced and stay the course, but I'll throw Daniel's out there too. Stay planted.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to The Weighing Machine, and thank you for your time and trust in Orion Advisor Solutions. The Weighing Machine is hosted by Rusty Vanneman, Chief Investment Officer at Orion Advisor Solutions, and me, Robin Murray, freelance writer and editor. If you have feedback or questions about our podcast today, please send us a note at rusty@orion.com.